Welcome to the June podcast for Neurosurgical Focus. I'm Natalie Charles. Neurosurgical Focus is a peer-reviewed, topic-based monthly publication available free online at thejns.org. The June issue is on the topic of brain abscesses, and the topic editors are Dr. Richard Wynn and Dr. Atul Goel. In this podcast, Drs. Atul Goel and Manu Kothari will discuss the treatment of brain abscesses and the nature of the brain's immune privilege status. Dr. Goel is an attending neurosurgeon, and Dr. Kothari is a noted microbiologist and immunologist at the King Edward Memorial Hospital and Seth G.S. Medical College in Mumbai, India. Both are widely published authors in their fields.
I welcome you to the June 2008 issue of Neurosurgical Focus that is dedicated to the understanding of the subject of brain abscess. The subject of brain abscess is old and has historical relevance. Initial attempts towards opening of the skull were made on cases with brain abscess. The successful outcome in these cases probably stimulated the neurosurgeons to become more enterprising in opening of the skull and treating brain tumors and other related lesions by surgery. The treatment of brain abscess challenges the clinical and diagnostic skills of a neurosurgeon. The treatment requires a quick and correct action, because if the diagnosis and treatment is not done promptly and timely, it may be fatal for the patient. And on the other hand, if the abscess is appropriately treated, it is conducive with cure from the problem. Brain abscess is still a major problem that a neurosurgeon has to face, particularly in developing countries like ours. I must admit that mortality in cases with brain abscess is still quite high. I feel that the most important reason for this appears to be delayed or inadequate treatment. In general, we see approximately 40 cases of brain abscesses in 1 year. Subdural empyemas constitute less than 5% of these cases. Most of the cases are secondary to otitis media. The next frequently encountered cause is cyanotic heart disease. Despite the high prevalence of paranasal sinusitis in our country, brain abscesses secondary to the same is quite low in number. The other remarkable thing that I find is that the post-operative or post-traumatic brain abscesses are distinctly infrequent. Over the years, the most important changes in the management of brain abscess are the diagnostic modalities. Quick and precise diagnosis is now possible. Image-guided surgery with abscess drainage is another big advance. However, the controversies in management, like drainage of abscess versus resection of the abscess wall, still continues. My current impression is that the cerebral supratentorial abscesses are best treated by an initial attempt by burrhole drainage and then subsequent drug therapy. Repeat aspirations may sometimes be necessary. Cerebellar abscess, on the other hand, should be treated by posterior fossa exploration and evacuation of the pus. Resection of the abscess capsule is sometimes quite easy and safe, but sometimes can be quite dangerous. Correct decision has to be taken at the time of surgery whether capsular resection should be attempted or not. The most important thing in the treatment of brain abscesses is the drainage of pus. I have realized that the method of drainage of pus also has to be learned and perfected. The abscess cavity needs to be drained completely and then washed with saline. Care has to be taken that the washing material does not spill into the brain parenchyma. After the drainage of pus, eradication of the primary focus of infection is the well-recognized part of the treatment. Treatment by antibiotics, depending on culture of bacteria, is then pursued. So with this summary, I like to go ahead further on this subject, and I will like to now introduce to you one of the most outstanding and respected doctors of our country, Professor Manu Kothari, who is Professor Emeritus of the Department of Anatomy of our hospital. He has been working on microbiology and immunology for the past 40 years. Professor Kothari, welcome to you.
Thank you, Dr. Goel.
Professor Kothari, what do you think is the secret of brain being resistant to brain abscess formation?
I think I would put it that this issue is best resolved by distinguishing between immunity and reactivity. I think it was in 1976 that we first delineated the distinction. Immunity is deliberate non-reactivity to a potent antigen in the best state of health. So the brain, the nervous tissue, innately remains loftily indifferent to the presence of microbe. And therefore, it is very natural that neural tissue or the entire neuraxial axis has remained immune to abscess formation for a simple reason, that it refuses to react to it. And if it doesn't react, subsequent pathology does not follow. If you take the opposite, that as and when it has to react, it is forced to react, then it marshals the forces within the blood vessels and within the brain tissues to localize the focus, the irritant or the antigen, and then subsequently sets about first creating abscess, then within it the pus, and then challenges the individual to seek medical treatment whereby the resolution of the crisis occurs.
Now, it is a well-known thing in general surgical teaching that you can actually spit into the peritoneum, but you cannot breathe into the knee joint. What do you think can be done to the brain, and what do you think the brain will react in the manner in which it should be, it should or it should not?
I think, Dr. Goyal, you know that in our country, high-velocity injuries and head injuries are plenty in number, and I have seen your own department attending to a number of compound injuries where you can laceration of the brain has occurred, and the mud and slush of the road and dirt has gone into the head, and yet you find that the brain remains immune. This more than speaks volume for the fact that brain is innate. And when this material goes in, there is direct continuity, and even in those circumstances, the brain remains loftily indifferent. I think this is the innate immunity of the brain or the whole neural axis.
So this is some kind of immune privilege that the brain enjoys. Professor Kothari, we in India in particular, we see so much infection all over the place. We see severe otitis media, we see infection in the nose and in the paranasal sinuses, we see so many patients in septicemia, we see patients having meningitis and things like this. But still, brain abscess appears to be distinctly low. I think this is what you mean by the privilege that brain enjoys and the resistance that it has to brain abscess formation.
I would add that the endothelium lining the cerebral vasculature, what can be called neuroangiothelium, is particularly choosy and does not let out microbes readily into the brain substance. I think it is more resistant to the presence of microbes than endothelium anywhere else.
I would like you to touch on this subject. What is the benevolence of pus formation to human tissues? Are inflammation and abscess formation a blessing, or do you think it is a curse?
I draw your attention to Howard Florey, the Nobel laureate's textbook of pathology, where he went to the extent of saying that inflammation is the backbone of entire pathology. I would feel that inflammation and its child, namely abscess formation, are a great invention of the human body, whereby a focus of non-self, whichever way it has arisen, is first located in place, arrested there, walled off, and then nature creates a hydrodynamic focus, whereby the focus along with the liquefied tissue, which may have come from the own individual, are thrown out. And therefore, I would dare say that inflammation and abscess formation reflect nature's genius at one of its best, and our birthright to survive is inflammation and abscess formation as and when they are needed.
There are several studies suggesting that brain is nothing so much like a lump of porridge. It is quite innately strong. Even direct injection of virulent bacteria into the brain of an animal seldom results in brain abscess formation. In fact, this condition has been produced consistently, like production of brain abscess in the brain only by injecting culture medium into the along with the bacteria, or by causing necrosis of the tissue at the time bacteria are inoculated. My feeling is that the brain's immunity to abscessing is twofold. Despite intimate contact with the inflamed and infected arachnoid, as also direct planting of virulent microbes into its substance. Immune privilege is clearly designed to dampen down inflammatory responses in certain vital organs. The same suppressive mechanisms would apply equally to inflammation caused by infectious or self-antigen. Professor Kothari, what do you think is the role of antibiotics in the treatment of brain abscesses?
I think when it comes to antibiosis, we should realize that antibiosis world over, no matter from which generation they've come, are on a steady decline. And what stands out clearly is that prior to antibiotics, much earlier to antibiotics, the success rate in brain abscess surgery was quite high. If McQueen in 1893 has astounding success, which means that antibiotics truly were irrelevant. During antibiotic era, when the antibiotics were riding high, the brain abscess recovery did not go up significantly. And now that the antibiotics are in decline, the brain abscess success rate just has remained the same. So I would say that antibiotics give us mental security without largely helping the patient.
I would like to know from you, what do you think is the future of brain abscess treatment?
This is a good question, Dr. Goel. Let me see 500 years from now. And my feeling is, with gadgetry bettering itself every second day, we'll have instant diagnosis and instant drainage possible within the least loss of time. And that is going to be of great advantage. I do not think we are going to get better antibiotics. And my reading is, given this technical advantage, whereby the time lapse is minimal, a moment will come when we shall deliberately not prescribe any antibiotics, and rest assured, the patient will go home with a less disturbed stomach and a cool brain.
Another small question I wish to ask you is, do you think this pus formation in the brain is different from pus formation in the rest of the body?
I guess so, that the pus formation in the brain tends to be more solid than liquid rather than elsewhere. And here a major factor is the abundance of collagen which comes off the walls of blood vessels. It grows around and grows within, so that the abscess tends to be solid and mimics a brain tumor. And because of this, the delineation of the abscess is good, one. Secondly, its recognition is quick. And thirdly, the chances of its draining into the towards the cortical surface or towards the ventricle are highly minimized. So I would say collagen derived from the vessel walls in this inflammatory focus is a forte of brain abscess, and therefore a brain abscess is more of a pyoma, and removal of the brain abscess is pyomectomy.
Thank you, Professor Kothari. So in short, my feeling is that brain abscesses have been treated for over a century. The method of treatment remains the same. Drainage of pus is the answer. How quickly you drain is dependent on how quickly you are geared to do this procedure. The basic method of treatment has not changed, and as Professor Kothari feels, it will not change in the next 1,000 years. However, with increasing advances in the technological field, the procedure will be done quickly and procedure will be done precisely. And that is what will form the future of treatment of brain abscesses. Thank you very much.
This concludes our podcast for the June issue of Neurosurgical Focus. Thank you for listening. Please join us for the July issue, when the topic will be psychosurgery. For more information on how to submit your research to Neurosurgical Focus or to see a list of upcoming topics, please visit thejns.org and click on Neurosurgical Focus. Comments on this podcast can be sent to jnspodcast@thejns.org.